Accession number 18202, Reel 2.
Mr. Fowles, Reel 2. I was actually remarking that later on, when I was in the Air Force and flying, there was no doubt about it, there was a certain amount of fellow feeling. Although, again, I have to admit that as I was eventually in fighter command, however late, I think there was more of this, again, fellow feeling than there was in bomber command, because bomber command, they did sort of have these jobs to do every night, and I think that there was much more feeling there. And I've certainly run into this since, you know, for instance, in the Air Crew Association, there's been a lot of feeling about the Germans, and particularly when Bomber Harris, of course, came into the news again some years ago, and his statue was put up in London. They do feel more than I think we used to in fighter command. It was a sort of sneaking admiration, you know, I think, for the Germans, certainly the fighter aircraft and things like this.
Now, did you listen to Churchill's broadcasts?
Yes. These, I was going to say earlier on, these were very, very inspiring, there's no doubt about it. And the broadcasts and the media and the reporting, I think, did a wonderful job. I suppose they were under the influence very much of the Ministry of, what was it, Ministry of Propaganda, was it? Or no, was that the German one? Ministry of Information, I think it was, in the war. And they did a very good job, because everyone thought that Churchill was a wonderful bloke. I mean, at the beginning of the war, of course, he wasn't anywhere about. And then I'm trying to remember now what happened then. Churchill seemed to be the man that was going to save us all, and whether, Chamberlain came back from Munich, as you know, in 1938, peace in our time, but of course it didn't last very long. Remember, during that time, my father was approached again about going back into the RSC. He'd been an armourer, but he felt he was a bit too old by then. But of course, they'd started to wake up just that last year of peace.
Did you ever listen to Lord Haw Haw?
Yes, I heard him once or twice, but I didn't go out of my way to listen to him. I thought it was a bit of a joke, and I think most people here did. That's safe to say that. You know, this is Germany calling, sort of thing, you know.
Now, you have already described how you wanted to volunteer for the RAF and when you went into uniform. Can you take up the RAF story now, please?
Yes. Here again, my main worry from day one in uniform, well, in fact, it was before that, but certainly when I was in uniform, my main worry was that the war would be over before I had a chance to get into it properly. Silly, really, but that's, I think, the fairly natural feeling from a young man who hasn't suffered greatly physically at that stage. I mean, I'd seen one or two nasty sights during the bombing, but that was about all. That was my war consisted to that stage. What happened? Oh, yes, I think when we'd been accepted in 1942, we'd gone through our medicals, which were quite stringent. Most of this was, as I remember, it was done up at Lord's Cricket Ground. And I seem to remember that we took the Oath of Allegiance I think it was in the long room. But I could be wrong there, but I've got a feeling it was in the long room. There were quite a few of us, and we all had to sort of repeat after me type of thing. What happened after that? Yes, we went, we were called up, we had to report to Lords again the following year. And then we were put into flats round St John's Wood. And I think that the block of flats, they were quite nice flats, of course, private places, service flats. I think the ours was, I got a feeling it was St John's Court. Anyway, we were in sort of rooms which had to be dormitory type rooms. There were usually anything between 3 and 6 cadets, as we were at that stage. We were kitted out. All our meals were taken along at Regent's Park at the zoo. We were marched up to the restaurant in the zoo and had our meals there. We used to go to Seymour Street baths for lectures, which of course included things like venereal disease lectures, which of course they were very keen about. Abbey Lodge was the central sick bay, and I remember going there because it was so hot when we were called up in the middle of the summer of 43, and we had to parade many times in overcoats and things like this, greatcoats. And it was really extremely hard and very uncomfortable. And I heard one day that a chap had mugged up on the symptoms of one or two diseases and illnesses, and presented himself at sick parade, and spent a very pleasant week in Abbey Lodge in the sick bay. And I thought, well, you know, I mean, they want us to have a little bit of initiative, so I'll see what I can do about this. And we'd just been had our inoculations. You know, it was a case of you went along a passage and there were corporals and sergeants down here, and you had anti-tetanus and this and that, and you finished up with a doctor vaccinating you. And I remember a chap behind me was saying, no, he was in front of me, that's right, I'm not going to be vaccinated, I know my rights, you can refuse to be vaccinated. And I said, well, I don't see the harm in it, although my grandmother had been the same way. And anyway, we got to this doctor at the end, and he was still protesting his resistance. And he said to this doctor, you can't vaccinate me, you know, I haven't agreed to it. And the doctor simply said, pass along, laddie, you've had it. Which is rather amusing. But the thing that did remind me of that was the fact of this sick bay that I tried to get into. And I found out that the thing to watch after this inoculation marathon was vaccinia, which is vaccine fever. And quite a lot of people apparently can or could in those days suffer from this fever if they'd been vaccinated. I'm not sure why it was, I'm no medico. So I thought, well, I'll have a shot at this. And I found that if one went sick and complained of being very, very hot and some headaches, it could be construed as vaccinia. So I duly went sick with my small kit, and my temperature was taken, and the medical officer looked at me and asked one or two questions, and said, right, report down to Abbey Lodge. And I thought, good, I've done it, and which I did. About 4 hours later, I was almost out for the count because I'd got vaccinia good and proper. And it wasn't my design, though, you know, I mean, I didn't want it. And I remember my father actually coming up and actually seeing me, and I'd spent a terrible night, and I must have lost about 8 or 9 pounds in weight. I remember the perspiration was absolutely pouring off me, and I couldn't sleep or anything. But as soon as that night was over, I started getting better. So I did at last get a few days off. Mm-hmm. Perhaps this shouldn't be recorded in the Imperial War Museum.
Certainly should. And next?
Ah, yes. Well, after that, incidentally, the St. John's Wood and the Regent's Park area was known as Aircrew Receiving Centre, and that was popularly known as Arcy Darcy. I beg your pardon. Arcy Darcy came a bit later on when we got to Heaton Park in Manchester, and it was then Aircrew Distributing Centre. But cover that. So we were at Aircrew Receiving Centre, and we must have been there, I think, could have been a month, and we did quite a bit of basic drill and all those sort of things, and a bit of admin and that sort of thing. Then we went to ITW, which is Initial Training Wing, and I got down to number 1, I think it was, ITW, which was at Babbacombe, just at the back of Torquay. Lovely place, and I was actually billeted in that place called the Sefton House Hotel. It was pretty sorry by this stage because there had been quite a few cadets through it. But it was one of the places that had been strafed, I think, the year before by, I'm not sure what the aircraft were, whether they were Messerschmitt 110s, or something like that, but they were certainly bomb-carrying aircraft, and they came in low under the radar screen, this was what I was told, and to prove it, of course, the church at St. Mary Church, which is just by Babbacombe, that was in a pretty bad way. A lot of cannon shell damage along these hotels on top of the cliff. But again, fortunately, my guardian angel must have been around because they didn't try it again. There were certainly lots of Bofors guns and things that then mounted along the top of the cliff, because I suppose they felt that these aircrew cadets were worth looking after. Then after that, I think we had about 2 months there. It was round about October time, I think. We had a week or two's leave. Then we went to grading school. And the grading school I went to was at a place called Thiel, which is near Reading, Theale, grass airfield with one or two small wooden huts and so forth. I imagine it was, the address must have been RAF Thiel. And we did, or we're supposed to do, up to 10 hours in Tiger Moths, dual instruction. And if we were any good, some of the instructors would get you off solo before you'd completed your 10 hours flying. I never made it, and as a result of this, I felt that my chance had come and gone and that I would never make a pilot. But I liked it very much indeed. I could tell quite a few stories about that. But
please do.
Well, I was going to say that... I'll come back to that later. I remember the first trip from Thiel in the Tiger Moth, and the pupil, of course, used to sit in the back, and as far as I can remember, back cockpit, and the instructor was in the front. And my instructor, I can't remember his name. I might be able to look it up in my logbook if it's there, the grading school. But we didn't actually have a personal logbook at that time, as far as I can remember. But this chap was a flight sergeant. And he was wearing one medal ribbon, which was in those days, the 39-43 star. Eventually that became the 39-45 star. And that's in front of the other campaign medals. Now, he took me up, and I could sense, without being too wise about the thing, that he was a bit bored. He'd obviously been on operations and he wanted to get back on them. I never asked him actually what he'd been doing. I didn't have that temerity. But he was a nice chap, very taciturn, didn't say very much. But we took off, and the cloud was very, very black and very low, so it must have been fairly low down. But he was so bored, I felt, that as soon as we got into the air, he said, "Now, if I do this with this thing, this control column, that happens, and if I push my feet up and down, that happens." He said, "Have you ever done any aerobatics?" So I said, "No, I've never been in the air. This is the first time I've been off terra firma." "Oh," he said, "Oh." Well, he said, "Do you mind if I do some aerobatics?" So I said, "Well, no." Well, I couldn't very well say yes, because I'd have that would have gone against me very much. So I sort of said, "No, not at all." And he said, "Well, as I tell you what we'll do," he said, "we'll do a loop." And I sort of cringed down in the cockpit, because I'd heard all about this looping the loop from the old man, my father. And I thought, well, God knows what's going to happen now, you know. So he said, "Perfectly simple," the instructor, "perfectly simple," he said. We dive this little old aeroplane of ours," he said, "to get some speed up. We make sure that we're not over revving, so we have to pull the throttle back a little bit as we go down," he said. "And then when we've got," I forget the speed we had to get up to for looping a Tiger Moth, it was still in miles per hour in those days, and he said, "When we get here, we pull the nose up quite sharply but smoothly, and we open up the old throttle," he said, "as the maximum," he said, "and then you pull it round," he said, "and as you see the second horizon," he said, "you chop the throttle again and you come out in a perfect loop." So I said yes, and I wasn't sick, it wasn't so bad, and he said, "Would you like to do one?" Remembering that I told him I'd never been in the air before. "Oh," I said, "yes." He said, "I'll talk you through it." So we proceeded to dive, and I dived the aeroplane and eased the throttle back, pulled it back. He said, "There's your first horizon." As we came over, he said, "There's your second horizon." And he said, "Now you can start chopping the throttle," which I did, and we came round in a loop. He said, "Very good indeed." He said, "In fact," he said, "it was better than mine, because you hit your own slipstream, I didn't." And I, from that day to this, I believe that he must have made some remarks in whatever the instructors had to do, to the effect that maybe, I like to think this, that here was a fellow who seemed to like aerobatics from day one, hadn't been sick, performed quite well without any knowledge, and could make a reasonable fighter pilot. I like to think that. But the fact was that although I hadn't soloed at grading school, when we got to the Aircrew Distributing Centre in Heaton Park, Manchester, after a few days, we were told what category we were going to be trained in. And it was in those days, it was the PNB scheme, Pilot, Navigator, Bomb Aimer. And of course, everyone wanted to be a pilot. And when they got to my name and read out pilot, it was as much as I could do to stop, you know, whooping. And I made it. But I still think that it was that flight sergeant chap who must have, you know, liked the feel of me. And if I knew his name now, I'd like to know if he was alive. But of course, I've forgotten. I don't know about things. But that's the story of grading school, and then having got to Manchester, which was in the grounds, you know, Heaton Park, which is has now been refurbished. We were billeted out, or some of us were billeted out in neighbouring houses. And I can't remember the name of the people that I was billeted with, but I was there for about a fortnight or 3 weeks, something like that. They were very nice people. They used to wake me quite early in the morning because we had to be on parade very early in the morning. I think about, I think 6:30 for breakfast, and then breakfast after the initial parade, and then of course the day went through. Lots of people in Heaton Park, split into three squadrons. The first thing my pal and I did was to discover that there were three cafeterias in the park, one for each squadron. And if you were in, say, one particular squadron, you had a red disc badge, and the next one, I think, was blue, and the other one might have been yellow. I can't really remember. But we learned that it was a very good idea, if you could make it, to collect all three coloured tabs, by which means you were able to satisfy your hunger, which was very considerable in those days, and if you moved fairly quickly, you got round three cafeterias and had three meals. So again, I think we demonstrated our initiative. But I'm sure that there are many other people who did the same things, and you could well find that it's all down in the archives now. But you see, they used to take us out on route marches and runs and all sorts of things. And then, after that, or during that time there at Heaton Park, my name was called out over the tannoy one day. Would I go to such and such orderly room? And when I got there, and there's my brother, home from the sea. Looked as though he'd just walked off the ship. He was in dirty oilskins and a tatty old matelot's hat. And he'd heard I was in Manchester, and he'd just bowled into Heaton Park and said, "I've been out in the Far East," or something like that. "Here I am at home for a week or two. I want to see my brother." And they let him in and gave me 24 hours leave, which was unheard of. I don't remember anything else. We went into Manchester, and I remember we piled up with an American soldier fella, I forget if he was commissioned or not, in the, is it the Grand Hotel in, what's the big hotel in Manchester? Still there, I think. It's either the Grand or Metropole, some lovely name like that. It was a very, very big, good hotel. But the only thing we found that night that we could drink in the hotel, the only thing they had no beer, was vodka. And it must have been good vodka, because I learned that you get drunk very rapidly on it, but you can, with a bit of luck, wake up the next morning without a hangover. That's another thing I learned. But I'm digressing. From Aircrew Receiving Centre, we were supposed to go overseas. But then the waiting and the delays started. And first of all, we went and did a second ITW at Scarborough. It was certainly the Grand Hotel there. We were in a smaller hotel, which again is still there, across the road from the Grand Hotel. I think it's in St. Michael's Square there. And my wife and I had a holiday there about 5 years ago, and we looked all these places up, including the local Smoky Joe's, which wasn't smoky anymore. When we'd finished there, oh, incidentally, I remember a chap I piled up with called Lelman. Now, I think it was Ray Lelman. And it didn't mean much to me at the time, but he was the only bloke who could beat me across country. And he used to smoke like a chimney. And he was a Falkland Islander who'd come across to the old country to volunteer, and was in the same crowd that I was in, but I hadn't met him before. But of course, Falkland Islands didn't mean an awful lot. I knew roughly where they were. But of course, many years later, what, I suppose 40 years later, we were, 40-something years later, we were getting to know exactly where the Falkland Islands were. And I often wondered if old Lelman went back. But he's a good bloke. When we finished there, they still weren't ready to send us overseas for training. because it was the, if you remember, well, that was the PMB scheme, that's Pilot, Navigator, Bomb Aimer. The overall plan, which actually had been formulated, I think, at the beginning of the war, and might have even been in 38, was the Empire Air Training Scheme. That had to be changed, of course, when we lost most of the empire, became the British Commonwealth Air Training Plan or something like that. But in my day, it was EATS. That was the Empire Air Training Scheme. And before I got onto that, we went back from ITW again to Heaton Park, to RCDARCY, Air Crew Distributing Centre. And from there, after a week or two, we were sent to East Kirkby. Kirkby, not Kirby. There's a Kirby in Liverpool, but this is East Kirkby, which was a big RAF aerodrome in Lincolnshire. Not all that far from Boston, of course. And squadrons there were 57 Squadron and 630 Squadron, I think, the Lancaster squadrons. This would have been very early in 1944, and I think we were there for the best part of 2 months. And during that time, we were dog's bodies. Anyone else who'd served that time or thereabouts would have been entitled to a 39-45 star, but we were cadets, we were dog's bodies, and we didn't qualify for anything. Not that it worried us. We still had to wear white flashes in the field service hats that we wore. All air cadets in training had a white flash around the front of the field service cap. Now, that was very interesting there, but it was, again, very uncomfortable. We had lots of bad weather, tremendous amount of snow, and I remember at one stage we had no boots. We were never issued with boots. I don't know, something to do with aircrew. I never had any, clod-hopping army-type boots. And I remember there were holes wearing through my shoes, and I tended to get on my hobby horse a bit, high horse, and I made written complaints to the orderly room and people, but no one did anything about it. But we still did our job, and that was largely bombing up Lancasters.
What's that?
Bombing up Lancasters.
Bobbing up?
Bombing up. Arming them. Well, not arming them, actually doing the labouring work. And there were various things. For instance, there was a can of incendiaries. And this, again, I speak from memory. I can't really visualise it all now. Probably a can was about 5 feet long. I forget how many incendiary bombs it used to take, but these incendiaries were not shaped aerodynamically. They were just sort of, I think they were hexagonal, but I'm not sure. They were, sort of like this type of thing. And they, being that shape, used to fit in beautifully like a jigsaw puzzle. They were the same width all the way up. And we had to load these cans.